From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 65 of Little Brother for December 18th, 2021. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started! There had been, briefly, a glimmer of a hope that streaming television as a successor to cable might put an end to the periodic battles between content providers and the companies that deliver it. In episode 57, and again in 64, I talked about YouTube having disagreements with Roku and the blockage that resulted. Well, YouTube is at the center of another one. At the start of this week, there was news that subscribers to YouTube's packaged streaming service, YouTube TV, would lose access to Disney-owned channels, including ABC and ESPN, among others. Well, here we are at the end of the week, and it has come to pass. YouTube TV is not carrying any Disney channels at all as of right now, until Disney and YouTube work out their differences. In exchange, however, subscribers to YouTube TV are receiving a $15 discount on their service. Back in episode 44, I mentioned an outage of the Amazon Web Services taking down large swathes of the internet. Well, it seems like they've gone and done it again. I think. On Wednesday, the rsysadmin subreddit contained a discussion of a possible outage of the AWS US West Zone, with first-hand but unconfirmed reports from various system administrators from across the country about the outage. Part of the problem, of course, is that it feels like Amazon's own status dashboards are run on Amazon's own systems and don't update when things go down because the updaters are down themselves. Anyway, service was restored within the day, and all is well in the land of cloudy computing. I've spoken before about the state of the federal government's cybersecurity, specifically in episodes 46, 49, and 55. The Department of Homeland Security has consistently scored the best amongst U.S. federal agencies in terms of their departmental cybersecurity stance, and now they want to put up some money to back that up. The department is launching a bug bounty program with bounties of $500 to $5,000, depending on the significance of the find. The critique, of course, is that these offered bounties are too small. Private corporations that offer bounties may offer as much as $25,000, fully five times as much. However, it must also be kept in mind that not all hackers are ethical. It is entirely foreseeable that more than the $5,000 offered could be made by ransoming the agency or selling its data to third parties or, heaven forbid, foreign governments. The risks of doing so are quite high, of course, but the potential rewards dwarf the offered bug bounty. In episode 47, I spoke at length about Apple's program to monitor your iPhone and iPad for content believed to be child porn by way of using an image comparison to known child porn content. I spoke out against it at the time, and I still do so on the grounds that the technology now exists. Apple has shown that it can be done, and it can be turned against arbitrary targets other than that for which it was intended. Well, now Apple have quietly removed any mention of the program from their child safety webpage, suggesting that they are wishing to quietly bury the issue, The unfortunate truth here, though, is that the cat is out of the bag. Apple have demonstrated that images can be identified quickly and easily using only the compute resources off of a handheld device, and there is little standing in the way of Apple being coerced into deploying that same technology for less than noble purposes. The Public Health Agency of Canada is seeking to purchase access to real-time cell tower location data to assist in the response to the COVID-19 pandemic and possibly for other public health applications. The idea is to characterize the movement of populations throughout Canada to provide situational awareness and to help inform policy, public health messaging, evaluation of public health measures, and other aspects related to public health response, programming, planning, and preparedness. The goal may well be noble, but the type of data that is being requested is ripe for abuse, and it's not clear that, once acquired, the access to the data will be kept strictly to its intended purpose. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Your account has been blocked for pretending to be someone else. Those are the words that greeted Taya Mai Bauman one day when she went to log into her Instagram account. She had held and actively used the account for over a decade and used it to display her artwork and to advertise her business, Metaverse Makeovers. And there lies the problem. Her Instagram handle, @Metaverse, suddenly became a hot property after Instagram's parent company changed its name from Facebook to Meta. Her account had fewer than 1,000 followers for most of the time that she held it, but the Facebook name change and the keynote address with Mark Zuckerberg talking up the metaverse drew unwanted attention to the account. Bauman consulted with intellectual property lawyers whose services were not within reach for her, so no results there. However, inquiries from a New York Times journalist suddenly got access to Bauman's account restored, without further comment from Meta. Dutch authorities have dropped the hammer on 10 pseudoscientific so-called negative ion health products. The products, marketed under a number of names including Energy Armor and Magnetics, spelled with an X, consist of pendants, sleep masks, bracelets, and similar products which purport to protect the wearer from 5G. There's only one problem. These products are radioactive. They may contain volcanic ash, titanium, tourmaline, zeolite, germanium, monazite sand, uranium, and thorium. As such, they are emitting low levels of ionizing radiation. Ionizing radiation inflicts genetic damage with too much exposure, and a low-level exposure over a long time is dangerous in much the same way as a brief, high-level exposure. In comparison, the 5G waves that these snake oil devices are supposed to be protecting you from are non-ionizing radiation and not substantially different from the waves emitted by 4G and 3G systems, or, indeed, the Wi-Fi that you've probably got in your home voluntarily. And you know what that music means. It's time for another episode of Who Got Pwnt This Week? Well, the elephant in the room is that the pwn this week is mostly everybody. A popular logging module for Java, fittingly called Log4j, was discovered to have an insanely bad vulnerability in it. How bad? Root shell bad. That's right, an attacker can execute arbitrary code on systems running Log4j in particular circumstances that are not hard to engineer. Cybersecurity firm Sophos observed earlier this week that there were hundreds of attacks per minute attempting to exploit this flaw. The flaw itself is called Log4Shell and was first detected on December 9th, with attacks starting immediately, literally the definition of a zero day. Any system using Log4j that allows user-defined strings can be impacted here. There are two mitigations. First, if you're running Java applications, add -d log4j2.formatmsg no lookups equals true to the JVM invocations. The other mitigation should come as no surprise to you coming from me. Patch your... Wait a minute. Oh, this gets better. It seems like Apache released a patch for Log4j, but it's still vulnerable. The original recommendation was to patch to version 2.16, but that version has a vulnerability with recursive lookups, which can bring about a stack overflow, which can bring about arbitrary code execution. So, yes, do the thing. Patch them up, but make sure you patch to version 2.17. In the end, Oracle's brag that Java runs on billions of devices? That should no longer be a statement of pride. That should be a statement of pure terror. So, patch your systems. Now, onto a more typical who got pwned this time. We have the state of Virginia. Virginia's Division of Legislative Automated Systems was hit with a ransomware attack. I was not able to find any information on the amount of ransom being charged, nor of the amount of data that may have been exfiltrated. However, it's worth noting that this has thrown a wrench into the works of the Virginia state government. This attack landed at the point in time when the state government is in the midst of preparing for the new legislative session set to start next month. And now, dear listeners, I have my first listener letter. It comes to me from a Redditor who goes by Atomic Rights, and he says, I've listened to two episodes now. I have to say it's really good. It feels like a condensed version of Risky Business, which I usually like, or a more commentated version of CyberWire, which is too dry for my taste. The audio production quality is really good too, even though my audio setup is not great. Well, hey, thank you for listening. I'm really glad you're enjoying the show. Don't worry about the quality of your audio setup. I do master the show for 5.1 channel systems, but I also always make sure it sounds good on a crappy mono Bluetooth speaker as well. I don't want to leave anyone out. Anyway, he continues. That interview you did with the guy from Helix Foundation was great. We've all been there with ISPs stonewalling us, and it's good to know about the FCC option. This is so very true. One of these days, I need to tell the saga of trying to get DSL delivered to my apartment back in 2000. It involved stonewalling and incompetence, not from the ISP, but from the local phone company. It dragged on for 5 months. Anyway, thanks for listening, and it's great to hear from you. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Additional thanks to Azriel, Fongaboo, and Thriller at Play for bringing stories to my attention. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. And our theme music is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well.